So on this trailer, I have something very specific to ask, and I wonder if you.
Ooh, I think I know where you're going.
Tell me what you think about it.
The CGI of the dog?
Oh God!
Is it? Am I right? Am I right?
You're 100% right.
Okay, good.
So, like I said last week, I watched Avatar.
Okay.
And Avatar, you know, it has that CGI of whatever 10, 20 years ago, however long ago that movie was.
Yeah, but it was like flying people in like some other right. planet. I mean, like, it's supposed to be cartoonish.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
It's episode 96. We're approaching the century mark. Ted Willett, how the hell are you?
Pretty damn good.
Nice. You have a good week?
Had a great week.
A great week. Not just a good week, but a great week.
A great week. We had one of those, you know, I think we told you we were doing the lanterns, the lights,
oh, that's
the
right.
lights
yeah.
fest. So
yeah,
that was part of it. But I guess before that, I have a pretty big beer, so I kind of want to crack it.
You know, me too. I got it's like a 16-ouncer. What do you have? Go ahead. You go first since you brought it up.
I have the Simsies Crowler.
Simsies.
Simsies in Burbank.
Whoa, how big is that thing?
It's 32 ounces.
Oh, man, you got me by like three beers. No, actually by, so, 16. No, you got me by two beers. Well,
so
yeah, you're doubling my beer.
I went to Simsies for lunch with one of our previous guests. I went with Todd Holmes from CSUN.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so he came down to Burbank. He's doing a little research study, and we had some lunch and did a little interview. And
are you at liberty to say what he's researching?
I don't think so. I think he said he can't.
Okay.
He's keeping me anonymous, so I have to keep him anonymous. You know, so anonymously, we'll just say it on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I asked it that way, if you had liberty, because,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing something and you don't want someone to scoop you. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so we're there and I was having lunch and there's a breakfast stout on the menu. So I had a little breakfast stout with lunch and Oscar,
Weren't you supposed to get like a lunch stout with lunch?
Well, you know, breakfast stout is good any time of day.
Kind of like a brunch.
Yeah. Turn lunch into a brunch and
breakfast stout. Who's drinking a 32 ounce crowler at breakfast? I mean,
come on. This wasn't the 32 ounce crowler. So that was okay. The stout. I was, you know, I was going for the stout for lunch. So it wasn't too high ABV. You know, I got to
gotcha.
Go back to work. But I said for the crowler,
it wasn't a 13%er that people want to keep pushing off on you.
No double digit percentage. But when I went to go get the crowler, I said the IPA, and you know, bartender was pouring me the IPA, making the crowler, and this other bartender who had given me the breakfast stout, he looked at it and he said, "Oh, 15 minute ads." He was like, "Oh yeah." He looked at it very approvingly, and he looked over at me, and I found out later his name's Oscar down at Simsies. With hi, Oscar. And he's like, "Oh, very good. You know, I saw you have the stout for lunch and now you have this great, you know, IPA." And I said, "Yeah, I don't do lagers." And he goes, "Oh, challenge accepted." And then he poured.
Wait, so what do you have here though? A lager, an IPA, or a stout?
So let's do what I have right now and then I'll finish my story. So this is, this is called 15 minute ads. It's a 7.3 IPA.
Oh, an IPA. Okay.
And it was canned on 11/26. Is that right?
And why don't you like 11/20. Lagers? A good lager is awesome.
Yeah. So that's what Oscar was saying. Hold on. Let's crack it.
I mean, we're not talking Budweiser, you know? I mean.
Yeah. So he had this. He's like, "Oh, challenge accepted." And then he poured me this lager, and it's a black. It's a black lager.
Ooh, yummy.
And it was amazing. And it was from Trustworthy, which is a Burbank brewery. It's Burbank in Las Vegas. There's two breweries, Trustworthy.
Okay.
And it's called the Kalon Black Lager. I can't put those two words together. I either want to say black lager or block lager.
It depends on where in the country you're from, but you might be right in either. You know?
This looks like a hazy.
Oh my God, we have the same glass tonight.
Yeah, we'll do the triple Carmelite tonight. And yeah, it looks a little hazy.
You know why I like it? Because it's a big glass if it's a lot of beer. So how is it?
Oh, it's nice. It's spicy. It's piney. It's not too sweet. And it's, it's complex, but it's only got about 3-4 notes in it. So it's going to be good. It's going to mellow nicely over the hour here.
All right. Well done.
Hit me with what you got. Oh, well, let's see. Let me make sure I got all my notes. So Simsies in Burbank is great. Always great for lunch. Oscar, yes. And Trustworthy. Got it. Okay. Got all my stuff.
You got everything. Okay. So I have a Bootleggers Brewery.
Oh.
And a Far Out IPA. So you can kind of see it there.
Trippy.
It's kind of hippy dippy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it is the front end. So the license plate on the van, it's like a... If you could, what do you call it?
VW.
Volkswagen bus. Yeah. And the license plate is West Coast Style India Pale Ale and Far Out IPA. And it's got like, I don't know, what would you call it? Like tie-dye, you know, but it's a can, 16 ounce. So you said your ABV was what?
7.3.
Oh, geez, I'm spilling. Well, I better pour before I spill. Hold on here. Yeah, let me pour this and then I'll look at what the ABV is here. I'm not even sure, but I want to pour this first. Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay, had to suck it off the glass.
Don't waste any.
No. Wow, jeepers. It's 7 or 7.4. I can't even see. Oh, 7%.
Nice.
And what's yours?
7.3.
Oh, you beat me by a 0.3. Yeah, mine's not a hazy either, so that's a good thing. All right, so let me take a sip here. Yeah, I would agree with how you talk about yours. I mean, it's only a couple of notes, but I think it's a little bit, it's mildly complex. And I think as the night goes on, it's going to smooth itself out. It's a little piney, kind of finishes off really smooth and mild. And it's not one of those overbearing, like you're drinking or chewing on cud. You know what I mean? It's like a good,
yeah,
it's like an overall good, smooth IPA.
Solid IPAs. We got some solid IPAs this week. Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, I think these are like your standard, no frills, really good, nothing fancy, but like what you expect from the label IPAs.
Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome. So, as I was saying before,
your week.
So, it started out last Saturday. In the morning, finishing up the birthday weekend. But in the morning, we went to see Ford versus Ferrari, which I'll talk about at the end of the episode.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
But right after that, we went straight to lunch and then we went straight to the desert. And we went all the way to Imperial, California, which is right close to the Mexican border.
And how far of a drive is that from the valley, like Northridge, for example?
Yeah, so from Northridge is probably about 3.5, 4.
Not to give away your address or anything. But.
From like 4 hours. Well, we've said it before. Kind of. Not the address, but the area. So it's about 4 hours, I would say.
About 4 hours, okay.
4 hour drive. And so it's called the Lights Fest. And they put it on 2 times a weekend, almost every weekend of the year, you know, about 100 times a year, the man we ran into. So we...
What you guys did wasn't like a one-off thing. It's like every weekend?
Every weekend they're going down and they're setting it up and they're putting it out and they're doing it and they do it again and they do it on a Saturday and they try to do it on the Sunday. And we went down. So we went down. We're heading down around.
What? Oh, wow.
We're heading down around lunchtime, right? 1 o'clock, something
like
that.
Yeah.
And we get in at like 4 o'clock and we had family friends that were meeting us down there. So the other family was, you know, already down there or like a half an hour ahead of us. And when we got down there, we're like, it's already dark. And thank God you gave us the headlamps because they were doing a great job. on the dining room table where I forgot them.
Oh my God. This guy.
So we were there without headlamps, but at least I had the rolling wagon that we had. And
I thought you were going to tell me you brought the headlamps and had no batteries or something.
No, I bought batteries the day before, and I put new fresh batteries in there. So you're welcome for those.
Man, this guy.
But I didn't have them with us when we went to go see the movie. And I was like, oh, we're not going to go home the wrong direction, you know? But we get in and we're trying to find this other family, and the cell phone reception's really bad. And we're like, and I'm kind of like, oh, we just changed, you know, cell phone carriers. And we're like, can we blame the cell phone carrier? I'm like, no, there's no cell phone reception out here whatsoever, right?
You're in the middle of nowhere.
The middle of the desert, you know? And Anne's trying to find people. And I'm like, just stay close to like the concessions and like the where, you know, where they sell t-shirts and stuff. And that way.
And like how many people, like 200, 300, 500, like 50? I mean, like how many people are you talking?
8,000 people.
Get out.
8,000 lanterns is what they say is going up in the air. It's amazing.
Every weekend?
Not every weekend, but this was supposed to be last weekend, and they combined the two weekends. They combined last weekends, which they didn't cancel, but they shifted around, and then they moved all the people that were supposed to be last weekend to this past weekend. So
if there's, yeah, hold on a second, let me get the numbers straight here. So you said they do this about 100 weekends a year, 100 days a year.
50 weekends a year, yeah.
50 weekends. So 50 weekends, so Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do.
Okay, well, whatever. Let's say 50 weekends times 8,000 people?
I doubt that they all have 8,000 people. I think the Southern California one is a big draw because it's Southern California and, you know.
Wait a minute then. It's not the one place in the these are all over the world?
All over the United States. They travel all over the United States.
Oh, I get it. It's not the same place. And
it's not the same place.
Like, when do you run out of people to go to this thing?
Well, we're going again. I've already put the post up in my office. I said April 4th, 2020, they're going to be in.
Was it that amazing?
They're going to be in NorCal. It's that amazing. It is a moving, visceral experience that you can't capture it in pictures. You take these awesome, phenomenal pictures with our brand new phones with nice, beautiful low light, you know, capturing.
Yeah, for sure.
But it just still doesn't capture this moment, this, you know, the visceral moment of watching this happen, you know, and you show it to people and people are like wowed by the pictures. But as someone who experienced it.
Yeah, the pictures were cool.
The pictures are cool, but being among these lanterns going up is so much more impactful.
Where do they go then?
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, let me finish the front part of my story. So we're trying to meet up with this other family. We're having a little cell phone reception. I'm getting some reception. I'm trying to text Peter, you know, Anne's trying to text Arlena, and we're kind of getting back and forth. We're getting very choppy kind of connections. So Anne's looking around trying to find somebody in charge, you know, and she finds Colin. And so Colin helps her out, and Colin's like, here, you can text from my phone. And he's like, we get Arlena and we're trying to text from his phone. And he's like, I'm the guy that puts on all these things. And she was like, my husband's birthday, you know, we're trying to celebrate his birthday and we're trying to meet up with his other family and we can't do it. And I was like, of course, everybody's going to say that they run the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so I get back to Anne, and Anne introduces me, and he was like, happy birthday. He goes, we got to get you hooked up. And he's like, here, let's get you a shirt or something. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And I was like, well, definitely mention the podcast. And he goes, all right, well, to make sure they know that we have a Black Friday deal. So this is my make good for this evening. So this comes out on Thanksgiving, right? So if it's today or tomorrow, you can check out thelightsfest.com.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And you could check out some place that's close to you in the United States. Or if you want to see half of the Trailer Junkies, unless we can convince Jimmy to go up to NorCal in April.
Where in NorCal is it?
Oh, it's like in a reservoir in NorCal. I have it on my wall at work. So we'll put it up there on our website for real this
Please
time.
Please send the info along.
I will.
And maybe you can meet both halves of the Trailer Junkies.
Awesome. And how was your week?
It was good, but hold on a second here. So all these like 8,000 lanterns go into the sky. Where do they land?
Okay.
Like what happens to them? How does the desert not burn down?
Well, there's nothing to burn in the desert. And they eventually, I think they just go up into the sky and they burn out. And then they kind of land in a berm on the other side, on the other side of a berm, other side of a hill.
Okay.
And when Bryce found out that this is where they all land, he was like, he got a flashlight and he goes, "Daddy, come with me." So we go over the berm. And I was taking pictures of some of the fallen lanterns because they have cool pictures on them. People drew pictures on them. People did different things.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And he's like, "I'm going to find mine." And I was like, there are thousands of, you know, there's probably 2,000, you know, lanterns on the ground here in this area. And it's not all of them. You know what I mean? Some of them were carried off here, there, other places. And he's like, "I'm going to look." I was like, "Bryce, you have 10 minutes to look and then we're going back because I'm not going to hang out the rest of the whole evening here with you looking for your one needle in a haystack."
Well, that's my other question. So, okay, these lanterns go off. They land over the berm. Does someone go and clean them up or do they just like disintegrate?
So they do. They are biodegradable. They're like bamboo and rice paper and stuff like that. But okay, at the end of the night, we're there.
So it rains and they kind of just disintegrate.
I'm sure partially. But at the end of the night, they do this cool thing where they have a lot of volunteers that are already volunteering for it. And then on top of that, they're like, "All right, the first 25 people that show up at the t-shirt booth, you get a free t-shirt for helping clean up," or something like that. So I was like, that's a cool trade, you know, like if, you know, if you want that or you want something else, I thought, you know, that's a good way to just keep. And it feels very communal, which is a cool thing too. And everybody's like talking about positivity and, you know, trying to.
So it's very hippy dippy.
It's very. It's like a Gen Z hippie, you know, it's like millennial hippies. It's not your full on hippie, but it's cool.
And what's the fuel that fuels the fire? Is it like kerosene or something, or what is it?
The love in your heart.
Oh, the love in your heart. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like kerosene or something. It's like a little pad on the cross underneath the lantern. He said, Colin said it's from a Thai festival.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is Thai, I believe.
And we were joking. It's from Tangled. So when Audrey goes next time, she wants to do a little Tangled cosplay and she'll dress up like Rapunzel and then we'll do it like over the water or something.
Yeah, unless her hair catches on fire. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool. And then, I mean, like you hold on to them and then you just let go and the thing just like takes off, or how does it?
Yeah. So it's weird because you expect to just light it and then let it go. But you basically light it and you hold it for.
You have to wait for the air inside the thing to heat up. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's so like a hot air balloon.
And then there's a lot of logistics we were trying to do where we were trying to get all four of us lit, and then all four of us to launch at the same time.
Oh, I'm sure you were lit.
Well, you can't drink there. You can't bring in your own alcohol.
Oh, you can't?
There's a little beer tent, but we're too stressed about trying to find people and get situated.
Yeah.
That we weren't drinking. But I think we'll go early next time, especially if it's NorCal. It's going to be too far to go late, you know, to kind of cut it as close as we did. And then I told the kids, I said, this is as close as we're going to get to the zombie apocalypse because, you know, long lines and trudging your stuff through sand. It's like, this is what it's going to be like, kids, if you get in the zombie apocalypse, except probably more food trucks at this thing.
More food trucks. Yeah. Yeah. Nice, man. Very cool. Yeah. So, I mean, just to answer your question,
yeah.
I mean, I want to learn more about it, but maybe we'll talk later because it sounds pretty awesome. But yeah, my mom was in town from Chicago. And when she came the day before she arrived, she was in a blizzard in Chicago and she arrives here in California and it was nice and warm, even though it was like in the 60s. So she had a good time. She volunteered in the boys' classrooms, first grade and TK, which is like transition kindergarten, which is like for kids who are like, they missed a cutoff for kindergarten, but they're too old for like preschool. And there's like this little window in there.
Yeah. Down here, they call it early fives, I think, or something.
Yeah. Well, it's all the same, I think, you know, and when the state made the change to the September 1st cutoff, all the districts were panicking because they were going to lose out on all that revenue. So they came up with all these like kindergarten schemes to recapture those kids.
Oh, no. You think it's a scheme?
Oh, I think it helps them with kindergarten. But I'm saying, though, that's why they came up with these things is to recapture the funds because they were going to lose out on 6 months of or whatever, 5 months of, you know, 4-year-olds.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So then we had the fall festival, and the boys had a little bit of, like, you know, let's go sing about turkey gobbling and farmers and, I don't know, cutting off turkey heads for dinner or something. I don't know what they even sang about. But it was like, you know, just Thanksgiving, kind of a little thing they had at their school. And then we got report cards today. So, and the boys are doing well in school. So it was really a good,
oh, good
school kind of a week with grandma visiting and volunteering in classrooms.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So with that.
Did grandma get in the front of the Urban Arrow?
No, we tried though. We tried. So what one of our traditions, we go to anything after school, like whether it's this fall festival or we go to, you know, I don't know, like anything they're doing, I don't know, arts and entertainment.
Yeah.
Let's just call it that. So they have plays, they have musicals, they have parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah.
We do anything after that. And the school's like down in this little bowl, little valley kind of a thing. And then what we'll do is we will go on our way home. At the top of the hill, we go to the Mexican restaurant that you guys have eaten at.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're just at the top of the hill. They're from the school. So it's a tradition. We go there. We get tacos. We get burritos. We get whatever we're going to get. But, yeah, and we did that, too. You know, so we got the Mexican food and everything and, you know, awesome Mexican food. But generally speaking, you know, great time. And grandma did not want to get in the front of the Urban Arrow. That kind of gets into what we weren't watching, you know, with grandma visiting. But I did watch a few things. But before we get into that, let's talk about The Call of the Wild.
Okay.
So you ever read Jack London?
I did not. I didn't read many books as a child. So I kind of got through life without reading the classics. So it's hard for me to push that on the kids, but luckily Audrey loves reading books and Bryce is well on his way.
Very cool.
You read it?
Yes, I did read Jack London's stories. He had a bunch of different books, bunch of different stories. And my dad had this like anthology of, I don't know, like five, maybe Jack London stories. I can't remember. It was so long ago. But Call of the Wild was one of them. And I remember reading it and thinking, wow, this is really cool. This guy goes to Alaska and he has all these adventures and everything. And then later in life as an adult, I heard some stories and some rumors. And I say rumors because I never really verified. And I even tried to do some research before this to see if good old Jack London was what the rumors said or not. And the rumors were that he was pretty much drunk,
mm-hmm.
who went up north and wrote about the adventures he wish he had had, but that he never had. And pretty much he was just a good author and never did anything, as opposed to he did these things and then wrote about them.
Right.
So I still don't know which is true. Did he do them and wrote about them, or was he just a good author and a drunk and never did any of it? Or maybe both. I don't know.
You're going to embellish, you know, if you're there, you're going to write about it and then you're going to imagine it even better than you experience. You know, you do what you can to embellish.
Well, yeah, you're not going to come away with a book if it's like, I got to Alaska, I caught a trout. I sat in my tent.
It was cold.
I mean, of course you're going to. Yeah, it was cold. The sun went down way too early. Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. You're going to make a story of it.
Right. But so on this trailer, I have something very specific to ask, and I wonder if you.
Ooh, I think I know where you're going.
Tell me what you think about it.
The CGI of the dog?
Oh, God.
Is it? Am I right? Am I right?
You're 100% right.
Okay, good.
So, like I said, last week I watched Avatar.
Okay.
And Avatar, you know, it has that CGI of whatever 10, 20 years ago, however long ago that movie was.
Yeah, but it was like flying people in like some other
right.
planet. I mean, like, it's supposed to be cartoonish.
Yeah. So the dog hits you and he looks like a cartoon. And my neighbor he won like a Promax award. And he won it with Martellus Bennett, you know, the football player, the Patriots tight end.
Yeah.
They won a Promax award together, and then he won an Ovation award from our, you know, Uber president of the company, all in one day. And the next day I went over to him and I showed him this trailer and I was like, doesn't the CG dog like disturb you? And his name is Billy. And Billy's like, no, it's like part of it. You know that it's CG, but you have to suspend disbelief. And I said, but I don't think they're done with it. I want red X's. And it's funny because that's like,
what are red X's?
See, and that's the inside thing. He was dying because he was like, no, red X's mean that you're not done with the effects. So whenever we watch rough cuts, people are trying to give notes and they're like, oh, that's not finished. That's not finished. So if you're going to say that's not finished in a rough cuts meeting about a spot that you have, then you to avoid that note, you put a red X over it, even though you're going to show it. You're going to show it like halfway through its process. But because you know it's not finished, you put a red X through the whole thing. So everybody knows the graphics are temp and everything's temp and we're gonna finish it. So I still think that they're going to have some lighting effects that are going to be done to this and maybe some other stuff. But I think they went a little far with the facial expressions and the facial features. And and Billy was saying maybe they even had like a human that was like making these faces, or the animators themselves are making the faces in the mirror, which is what a lot of animators did when it was straight animation. And they were trying to draw to that, or trying to, mold the character to that, because the facial expressions of this dog, they're canine to a point, but they also are very humanistic. And I think that's what evolution did to dogs, was it made dogs man's best friend by making them very attractive to humans. The reason that humans, even ancient humans, fed dogs was the fact that dogs figured out how to communicate with facial expressions to early humans. So I just love that idea. But then this kind of feels like it takes it too far. And there are way too many shots of this dog that are just so CG that I can't put it out of my mind. What did it distract you?
Well, it completely distracted me. And you're thinking more like the anthropomorphism side of, we're trying to place human emotion onto an animal who may or may not even be thinking or feeling what we believe they are thinking or feeling. Is that what you mean, or?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know the book, but I know that I've read a review of a book that talks about man's best friend, and it says that evolution has given the dog the tools to trick us into this anthropomorphic projection.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's what makes dogs able to walk up to a campsite in ancient, in caveman times, and be able to be befriended by early humans,
Yeah, befriend humans and everything. My biggest complaint with it isn't necessarily what you're saying as far as the facial expressions are too close to human facial expressions. My biggest complaint is what is it, 50, 60, 70 years, we have trained animals to be in movies.
Yes.
And it's a typical dog role.
Yeah.
It's not anything like...
It's Air Bud. You could get Air Bud to do this. Come on.
Yeah.
Pay a real dog to do this.
It's a typical dog role. There's no reason we can't employ a dog to act out this role, to just walk along in heel mode, meaning next to the guy.
Yeah.
And run after a stick and run down a hallway and look and perk his ears and do all the stuff they would do for like 50 years of Hollywood or more with animals, or probably 70 years of Hollywood with animals.
Yeah.
Why is it that we need to go to CGI? I mean, just to have a dog like fetch a stick doesn't even make sense to me.
Yeah,
I got a dog.
I don't know.
He's well capable of doing this role. My dog ain't dumb.
And
what annoyed me.
And the dog in Frasier that I think is a Jack Russell Terrier, that dog died a millionaire. That dog made $4 million on Frasier.
Oh, totally. You know what it is? They're probably like, why are we going to give $4 million to a dog when we can employ five people and pay him $250,000? 50 grand each,
yep,
right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's where it is. It's just an economic thing or something. But I mean, that was the thing that really struck me is you have CGI of just a guy petting a dog.
Yeah. So you even thought the scenes where he's petting the dog, he's not really petting the dog.
I think the whole thing is CGI. I don't think the dog exists.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, why would you have like half a dog in the movie? I don't even know. Like, it's just the whole thing to me is bizarre with the dog. You know, I mean, I read Call of the Wild like, oh man, what was I, 12 or something? I mean, we're talking like,
oh my God,
decades ago.
Now that you're talking about it,
I don't even remember
the
story.
Yeah, now that you're talking about it, I think I read 3 pages of White Fang.
White Fang. I read White Fang too because it was all in the same book, but it was all Jack London stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, the main thing is though, it's like, I don't even remember the story other than he's in Alaska and this dog is like a hero kind of a thing. But
right.
But the biggest thing about it, though, is I don't know if I could get past the dog. I'm sure the boys will have no problem, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if they want to watch it, you know, and it winds up on Disney Plus or something. I don't even know who owns this thing.
It'll probably end up on Disney Plus. It's a Fox movie. So it's 20th.
That I knew.
It's 20th but... Century Fox, but it does feel Disney, doesn't it?
It feels total Disney.
It's weird. Like, why not just throw Disney label on that thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I guess the deal was done before the whole merger and all that stuff. So
yeah, who knows when it comes to that kind of stuff, you know, but I don't know, man. You going to watch it? I mean, I guess we can move on, but you're going to watch it?
Yeah. So let's move on. I'm definitely going to see it. I don't know when I'm going to see it. I guess since we saw Ford versus Ferrari, we're seeing a lot more Fox movies at work. So that's fun. So this feels like a movie that we'll definitely see during our wonderful thank you so much, Disney, for the employee screenings.
Very cool. I mean, I would probably watch it because I think this is something the boys will
watch. Oh, the boys would love, they'd eat this up, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, CGI aside, I mean, I'm sure the story is awesome. Harrison Ford's one of my favorite actors of all time.
And this is just taking advantage of his cantankerous old man, you know, get off my tundra, you know.
I like that. I like that. Although, get off my marsh now. I mean, the tundra's melting, you know? I mean, jeepers. All right. Oh, there, Teddy. You Irishman, are you? The old Irishman.
Oh, so I wrote on this one, I was like, Netflix and chills, man.
Oh, looking forward to tomorrow night. We're going to watch it.
This thing was so good. I mean.
Oh, you watched it?
No. The trailer.
Oh.
The trailer was so good.
Oh, the trailer's great.
The trailer takes you through this whole, it takes you through the whole life cycle. I mean, it is a beautiful homage to the film, and I haven't even seen the film yet. But at the very end, you know exactly what's going to happen to Jimmy Hoffa, right? You know.
What happens? What happens?
Buried under whatever, that stadium in New York.
Yeah, but anyway, Giants, so no. What is it? The Meadows? No, what is it?
Meadowlands? Yeah, Meadow
the
something.
The Meadowlands. Is that rumor or you think he really is buried there?
I don't know.
It's got to be rumor.
But it's so perfect. It just felt like Goodfellas and it felt fresh and it felt new and it felt like.
Didn't it though?
Millennials and Gen Z, you're welcome. You know, I'll show you Goodfellas eventually, but you guys are gonna have this, and it's gonna be phenomenal. And when he's leaning into the car, and the other people are like, "Oh, we'll get your car later," or something like that, it was just so perfect. It was just this perfect moment between all those characters, and you knew exactly what was going on, and it didn't even matter, you know?
Dude, when you see Pesci, hey, you a tough guy or whatever you say, you know? And, yeah.
Only three people have these rings.
Yeah, De Niro says like all yous. I'm just like, really? All of yous? You know, I mean like, but I'll tell you though, I never knew Hoffa was head of the Teamsters, and a couple thousand years ago he was Julius Caesar.
Ooh, ah!
What's the name? How do you even pronounce that? Syrian? What? Nines?
Who? What?
The guy who plays Jimmy Hoffa.
Al Pacino.
Was that Al Pacino? What?
Hey, he's that blind scent of a woman guy.
Oh my God, he looks like the guy who played Julius Caesar in Rome.
What? Really?
Do I need to watch that again?
Oh, you need to watch it again.
Holy cow. Hold on. I'm going to put it on really quick. I got to see here. Hold on. I'm going to watch it really quick.
Okay, let's watch it.
That's holy moly. Oh, I know Harvey Keitel. Hold on here. Oh my God. You're right. It is Al Pacino.
Al Pacino.
But it looks like, what's his name? Syrian Hines. It looks just like him. What was I thinking? Wow. Okay. Hey, you know, I'm totally off.
Oh, Syrian Hines. Yes.
Doesn't he look like him?
He does. He looks exactly like Syrian Hines.
That's what I get for doing no homework.
I know. You like to go in fresh. I appreciate going in fresh.
Well, you go in fresh, you get the wrong ideas. But I would say, though, typical mob boss movie, wouldn't you say?
I would say typical is too pedestrian of a word. I mean, this is this is a Scorsese masterpiece in the making. Like,
Oh my God.
You can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be it's going to be amazing. It's going to be The Departed wrapped in Goodfellas, you know? Like it
Can I say how does Scorsese, well, pardon the pun, but how does Scorsese score this? Netflix scores this. I mean, and you're talking like, I mean, to get these actors, to get this directing, to get this high end production, and it's like a Netflix movie.
Well,
I mean, how does that happen?
I mean, it's played perfectly. Netflix definitely saw the future, and when we get to what we're watching, the streaming that I'm watching is across three streaming services, and none of them are named Netflix, because Netflix has no draw. But this will draw me back, and I will watch this. You know.
Oh my God. I'm like I said, at the end of this, I saw that it's like now playing on Netflix, whatever I told Clarissa. Well, tomorrow night, I know what I'm watching.
but it's, you know, it has to, they're paying through the nose. They're paying because they know that they have to compete with Amazon Prime, Apple TV Plus, and Disney Plus, you know?
There you go. Oh, right. They released it perfect. You're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like everybody's, you know, people in real life are coming to me and, you know, they know we do this podcast and I would talk about streaming with everyone because it's what we talk about. It's water cooler talk.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, what are you watching? And people are coming to me saying, there's nothing on Netflix that I want to see that isn't covered by these other things, by these other services.
I agree with that.
And you've said it before, and so many people, and I'm like, you know, we don't have to say it because we work at Disney. And people are like, well, it's true. Like, Disney has some stuff, and you know, and these other streaming services all have things that are kind of drawing us in and keeping us engaged. And where's Netflix? Is Netflix extra? Is Netflix superfluous? And when they have content like this, it says that they're not, you know?
At $13 a month, I mean,
that's a tough spend, right? When everything else
I'm
costs,
I'm just saying, Disney Plus, we came in around $3. I think if we didn't get the deal, it's like $6.
Yeah.
Apple is what, $6-$7, something around that range.
Mm-hmm.
HBO is $15.
Yeah, no way.
Right. But I'm just saying, though, like, Netflix is kind of approaching the 15, you know, at 13, but it's like, man, but you look at some of these other ones, you know, what's like CBS. I mean, that's, you know, CBS, they're a little bit lower on the totem pole, if you ask me, but they're what, around $5-$6, something like that.
They're $6. And we definitely want to see Picard, but because they release weekly, we're going to wait and we're going to binge it. We're going to do it in a month, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Turn it on, turn it off. We talked about
it. Turn it on, turn it off. So yes, so this is a must watch. We're definitely going to see it. I will be interested around Oscar time how this fares, given you know the track record.
And that's why they have the theatrical pairing.
Yeah.
With the streaming release.
The limited theatrical release, yes.
That's strictly to make it for Academy because, I mean, let's put it this way, you know, De Niro, Pacino, Harvey Keitel, you know, Pesci. I mean, Ray Romano for crying out loud. it's all the Italians, you know? Well, not Harvey Keitel but.
Yeah.
But incredible, incredible.
Oh, all-star cast, amazing.
And then at a minute 31, it is literally a flash of about a half a second.
Uh-huh.
And they show Pesci and the guys sitting around one of those, like, you know, like circle booths.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you are walking into the restaurant, and it could be who knows who it is. Maybe it's Hoffa. I mean, who knows? But all it says is, like, either there's going to be a hit placed on you, or you're, like, the made man.
This is the planning. Yeah, this is where you get the ring, right? This is, like, the...
Yeah, it's totally, like... I mean, that split second. And then they bring in, like, Kennedy and stuff. And I mean, like, oh, my God, it just looks... I mean, the historic bent on the story. And I looked it up, too. And the Irishman, he died in 2003 at the age of 83. He was born 1920. And, I mean, the history here... And everybody wants to know what happened to Hoffa. So, I mean, who's not going to watch this?
Yeah.
And, you know, and the funny thing is, it's going to answer no questions. We're all going to watch it thinking Scorsese knows something. And, like, even still, it's not going to say, oh, yeah, Hoffa was, like... I just thought of this. What was the movie where, like, they show it and he comes out of the diner and then, like, he just disappears?
Oh, I don't remember that movie. No, I don't know this.
That was also a Joe Pesci movie, I believe.
Was it?
Yeah. What was it? Let's look that up.
Okay. Oh, so it's the night... I looked it up. It's the Danny DeVito and Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, DeVito directed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
And then he walks, and then he comes out of the diner, sits in the car, and then, like, the closing act of the movie was pretty much, like, nobody knows what happened to him. He just kind of went missing.
Ah.
But that really is what happened to him. He went missing, you know? And, I mean, it's so bizarre, man. It's so bizarre. It's one of the mysteries of modern America and the mob.
I mean, it shows the power of the mob that someone so high profile can just vanish.
Well, and then if you think about it, I mean, if you want to bring in more conspiracy, there's the Kennedy side of it and his assassination.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. I don't know, but talking about Kennedy, I mean, that just takes us way back.
You want to go the way back?
Let's go the way back.
So, I don't know. I threw this in there because I'm still a Ben Affleck fan.
I like him.
I like this movie. I thought it would round it out. I mean, this is like the movies we had, like Harrison Ford, you know, the whole Scorsese crew and Ben Affleck. It feels like old Hollywood. And it feels like, even though the Irishman's a streaming service, it really felt like Hollywood, right? It feels like these are movies for the movie theater, you know?
Well, I would say... Of the three, if you want to look at Hollywood and everything, I mean, I think in the modern era of classic actors, the Irishman reigns it in.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the golden age, you know, the 50s, 40s, 50s, if you want to look at, like, the golden age of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And that crop of actors, William Holden and, you know, Barbara Stanwyck. And, you know, if you want to get, like, way back there, the Irishman, I think, is the modern era of the modern era of the classic actor.
Right.
And then you look at The Call of the Wild and Harrison Ford is in there. But, like, Harrison Ford takes on a whole other genre of actor outside of the Scorsese side of things. And then Ben Affleck gets kind of caught in the middle, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, like, he's kind of like the Good Will Hunting, the 90s kind of Hollywood, you know? And I mean, I know, like, when you look at Goodfellas and stuff, they were in the 90s, but I think that era of actor can transcend a number of decades. But Ben Affleck, though, I mean, I think he covers, I mean, you know, the funny thing is they say like the, what was it? Not the attorney. What was it?
The accountant. And
the accountant.
And the warrior. Yeah. The accountant I loved. I love the accountant.
Was that the autism assassin?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
He was phenomenal in that. It was a great movie.
Yeah.
And then the warrior, like those.
That one I don't know.
Oh, that's a great movie. It's about boxers and there's a bunch of, you know, there's a great bunch of character studies.
Oh, the warrior. That was the guy who went to prison?
Yeah.
Okay. I know who you're talking about.
So I think the pedigree of this, the legacy cell of this is in the right vein. If you're a fan of those movies, then you're going to like this kind of movie. And it's called The Way Back, but it feels like the comeback. And, you know, Ben Affleck has had his own personal trials and tribulations. So it feels like it's his own personal comeback, you know, and I feel like I'm rooting for this guy. I don't care that he's had problems with, you know, drinking or addiction or anything like that. It feels right. It feels like, you know, salt of the earth. You know, it feels like he's the kid from Good Will Hunting, grown up, trying to leave, but coming back to truly succeed. And, you know, and it's a sports movie. It's like this salt of the earth sports movie that's gonna talk about like the underdog, and there's no American story that's better than the underdog story, you know. Like if you're talking about sports movies and you talk about Miracle and you talk about any of the sports movies, that, you know, Bad News Bears, even, you know, it's about underdogs. Even Rocky's an underdog. And we as Americans.
Oh, Rocky's great.
As Americans, we are born and programmed to root for underdogs. So this is the perfect space to operate, you know?
So the one thing that, okay, he's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And he's called back to his high school to coach his alma mater. And, you know, he's going to take over this team. Is this more about a recovering alcoholic who has like a rebirth, or is it about an old washed up basketball player who has a rebirth and brings back a basketball team? What is it more, do you think?
To me, I read it as, you know, the people that peak in high school. You know, when you peak in high school and you can never,
you're over when you're 40.
Yeah, then when you go to, right, when you go to that reunion, and I've never been to a reunion, so I don't really know from firsthand experience, but I'm sure when you go to a reunion and you, the best thing you've done was, you know, be the king of prom or whatever, then the whole rest of your life is kind of sad. So I love that idea of trying to, you know, claw your way out of the hole that pinnacle of success in high school gives you, you know?
Yeah. And I've often thought too, like if, you know, like I sometimes, you know, I work in a high school,
uh-huh,
and I hear parents tell me like, this is supposed to be the best time of your life.
No, it's not.
And I think I think to myself, if this is the best time, like what if you live to be 100,
right,
you know, you have like 82 years of the worst time,
right?
You know, like there's no way this is the best time, you know? I mean, like I always say, life begins at 40. You know, like you're old enough to have enough wisdom, enough money, and yet you're young enough to still have the energy to enjoy shit, you know?
Yeah, 40 is the new 20. And I'm hoping as a 45-year-old that 50 is the new 30, because I really could use a little 30.
40 is the new 20 minus the aches and pains.
Right.
Minus the stiffness when I get up at 5 in the morning to lift weights and go out for 100-mile bike rides.
Ouch. Yeah.
But hey, man, it's like, you know, I'm pushing 50 and I'm still doing it, so I love it. But another question, Bishop, the basketball team, the school, and they show CIF, which indicates California.
Yeah.
Bishop in the Owens Valley, you know, on your way to Mammoth,
yep,
just outside of all that.
It's a Bigfoot capital of the world.
Bishop's the Bigfoot capital of the world? I thought like up north or something, like in,
I don't know. I think
Oregon.
I think there's been a lot of Bishop Bigfoot sightings.
And I tried doing research if this was like a true story or if this was like
based on, yeah,
you know, whatever school, yeah, based on and the school and everything. And there's like a Catholic school in Iowa about Bishop basketball, and there's this bishop, but it gives all indications that it's in California. And I don't know. I mean, do you know anything about the story? I did research. This is one of the ones after I watched it cold, like I'd like to do.
Right.
I went and I did like a ton of Googling around and I couldn't find anything about it.
I didn't do any research after the fact. I just liked the rawness of Ben Affleck in this space. And I just liked what he brought to this role and like the idea of him playing somebody struggling with, you know, alcoholism or, you know, addiction in general was something that was, you know, felt very real, very gritty. So I like that part of it.
Yeah.
I really thought that they kind of, there's a lot of sports in the trailer, a lot of basketball in there, but I don't think there's enough. I think they should have played more basketball. And then it's kind of the idea of the whole thing is about basketball, but basketball is more of a backdrop for the rebirth of the phoenix of this person, you know?
Hey, Ted, you ever drink in the shower?
No. You?
No, you never did?
Never did. Did you?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Honestly, I don't think I ever have, but who knows? Maybe I was like at a party and I needed to like take a quick shower and I just figured I'd sip on a beer. I don't even know. Like
I told you, we locked ourselves in the bathroom when we had that two suitcases full of Keystone in the tub with ice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we didn't shower because, you know, we were just drinking beers, but we did drink a lot of beers in the bathroom.
Okay. The music, pretty slow tempo, keeps the mood somber throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there should have been like an uptick in the music when the basketball got going? Or what do you think of that part of the trailer?
Yeah. So to me, the music, it sold like a religious aspect to it.
It stays very flat throughout, I thought.
It felt religious, the music.
Religious, okay.
It had like this religious redeemer quality to it, where it's like,
yeah,
this is the redemption song. So I definitely felt like this redeeming quality of rising from the dead or rising from the ashes or just like revival.
Revival. And who do you think the tombstone was if you're thinking about revival?
Oh, I don't even know. I don't know. I didn't give it much thought.
Well,
who do you think it is?
Clarissa thought like his son or something. And I thought it was like his dad. Like, dad, I'm back. You know, like,
yeah,
you were there when I was a kid. And now I'm coaching a team and I'm a drunk and I'm trying to like heal myself. And Clarissa thought it was like his kid who played on the team or something. But I think it's more his old man, you know?
That makes sense. Either one of those things would be
would
be a nice angle.
Speculation. Yeah. All right, man. So what we're watching, if you don't mind moving on.
Let's jump straight to that because let's bookend this. I'll transition for us. In the beginning, we had Harrison Ford, who played Jack Ryan. And at the end, we had Ben Affleck, who also played Jack Ryan. And this week I have been watching Jack Ryan.
Okay.
The new John Krasinski.
With John Krasinski.
So season two of Jack Ryan is out and it's on Amazon Prime.
It's been out for quite some time.
No. Second season's out now.
Second season. Yeah. It's been out for about 2 months, 3 months.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So, yes. So, well, I haven't been watching that because I was.
We have not watched it either, but it's been out for a while.
It's been out for a while, but I was like, ooh, I like what I'm seeing on Disney Plus. I like what I'm seeing on, you know, Apple TV Plus, but I have this other streaming service. What's on here that I'm not watching, you know? And it's so funny because we have Hulu, Amazon Prime, and Netflix. But I'm like, let me check out Amazon Prime. I think it's really good. I think the second season of this, I'm about two, three episodes into that.
And that's the Syrian angle or something?
This is Venezuela. We're doing Venezuela.
Oh, Venezuela. Yeah. And there's like a bomb that's going to go off or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, that was the first.
I watched the trailer for it. That's all
I know. They did another.
I'm a trailer junkie after all.
So yeah, so that's the one of the things we were watching was Jack Ryan, or I was watching. And then Mandalorian, I'm three episodes into that.
Okay, we watched the second episode.
And
wait, how are you three episodes? It doesn't come out until tonight or
it
something.
It came out last night at midnight, and then we watched it this morning at 8 o'clock when I dropped the kids off.
Wait, I thought you said it comes out...
Thursday night at midnight.
Oh, Thursday night at midnight.
Yes.
I'm thinking, you said Thursday night at midnight, and I'm like, it comes out Friday. So I'm like, it's not out yet.
So
we wouldn't have watched it anyway.
So I told the kids this morning, I said, we get in the car and it's about a 30-minute ride to school, 30 to 35 minutes. And we get in the car and I was like, so kids, do you want to watch Mandalorian on the way into work and the way into school? And Audrey's like, no, I want to see it on the big screen.
They're old enough for it.
Right. They're old enough for it. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. My kids aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. So Audrey didn't want to see it and Bryce wanted to see it. And I'm like, oh, I didn't want two answers. So we didn't watch it because Audrey didn't want to see it.
That's how it always is.
But we got to Bryce's school and Bryce is like, can we watch a little bit of it? So I let Bryce watch like the first 15 minutes of it. And I was like, all right, at 8:15, you have to go in, you know, at 8:25, you're late, but we're going to have to cut this off at 8:15. So he watches the first 15 minutes of episode 3 called The Sin, you know?
How many minutes, or what is it, about 30, 35 minutes again?
It's like 35, it's like 37 minutes, but I'm sure 2 minutes of that is, you know, at least 2 minutes of that is credits.
Yeah.
So we watched the first 14 minutes and I cut it off on him and I'm like, you have to stop. You have to wait for it tonight, you know? And then as we drive over to my office, I'm like, Ann, let's finish this episode. We have time before I have to go into work at 9, you know? So Ann and I finished the episode and later the kids are like, did you watch the rest of it? And Ann,
and you're like, no.
And no, Ann threw me under the bus. She was like, Daddy forced me to watch it. And I was like, Okay.
Threw you under the bus.
Okay, you didn't have a choice. You're correct. I could have watched it at work, but I wanted to watch it with you, and we watched it in the car. And it's so dark. The cinematography is all very, very dark.
Okay.
But the story for episode 3 is phenomenal, and 3 is by far my favorite episode thus far.
Well, maybe when I hang up here tonight, we'll go watch it before bed.
There you go. The best thing that I've watched this week, though, by far, is The Morning Show.
Really? Is that good?
It's that good.
Wow. Okay.
And it's so funny because at times Jennifer Aniston, I think she's like not doing such a great job acting. And you're kind of like, maybe this is too much drama for her to handle. But then when you reflect on the role, on the parts of the roles where she looks like she's acting, it's just her character that's acting.
She's like, I'm not acting. I've done this before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like she's playing a part and she has to act like she's acting upset when she's not upset. You know what I mean? So there's a part where her character is acting like a certain way.
Yeah.
And she actually pulls that off.
Sure.
And then there's parts where she and Reese Witherspoon are together and very vulnerable and very open. And that is just so raw and real. And it's like, oh, this is some real good acting, you know, like,
yeah.
Maybe that other acting, and you look back on the scenes and like, oh, yeah, that could be the character playing like she's acting against that. So that's the character acting, you know, showing the acting. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of throw it back to that Meredith Vieira part where she talks about the yellow dress. Have you ever seen this clip? I couldn't find the clip, and I'm like, wow, the Today Show is pretty powerful if they can scrub the internet and figure out how to, you know, get rid of this scene. But basically there's a segment on the Today Show where Meredith Vieira talks about this woman in fashion. She comes on in this yellow dress. And she's wearing the yellow dress, and Meredith Vieira basically says, oh, that's a god-awful dress you have on. I would never wear it. And then the end, she realizes that she said this on live air, and she goes, but it looks great on you. And she's totally like trying to like play it
up. No, I missed that one. That sounds
hilarious. It is hilarious, but they scrubbed it. Oh, and on top of that, Steve Carell. There's some scenes with Steve Carell where it's like, oh my God, the publicist for Matt Lauer wrote this thing, because it's basically like this Matt Lauer apology piece where Steve Carell has dinner with a Roman Polanski type character played by Martin, played by Martin Short. And basically after they play tennis for an afternoon, they have dinner together, and Steve Carell's like, "I'm not a monster like you, you know, child raper, you know."
Oh wow!
And I was like, "Wow, this is really like playing straight into Matt Lauer's hand, you know." So I love where it's going. It is phenomenal. Incredible. It is a great piece of television. I will say that Apple TV Plus. I'm sorry, Apple, you have fallen on your face with this player. The player does not save my place to save my life. Every time I stop the episode, I have to remember what minute marker I'm at so that I can scrub to it the next time I open the app.
Isn't that the worst?
Right? Talk about first world problems. I'm watching it at the gym. I get off the treadmill and I'm like, all right, remember there's 17 minutes left of the episode. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, that's not even first world problems. That's like, I don't know. When did Netflix come out for streaming? Like 2009 or something? I mean, they were saving your spot way back when.
I bitched.
Everybody saves your spot.
I bitched about Disney Plus not saving my spot. But we were in somebody else's profile because we have all the four of the family have their own profile page. So I was on Bryce's. I was like, oh, it didn't say my Mandalorian spot. And they were like, Daddy, you're in Bryce's profile. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly.
My fault.
So we were, we watched the second episode of Mandalorian.
Okay, good. You love the Mudhorn? Is the Mudhorn cool?
The Mudhorn. Which one was that?
That's that big rhinoceros.
Oh, yeah. When he went to get the egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing I loved were like the Jawas. Like, it was the first time, I think, of all the Star Wars that you saw the Jawas up close in person.
Oh, it's great. The Jawas are all over the place and they're awful.
Yeah. But I've been getting into the Lance Armstrong podcast.
Oh, you're still doing that. Okay, cool.
Just brief background. Like, I've been into bicycle racing my whole life. Well, maybe not my whole life, but I've been into bicycle racing for a long time.
Your adult life?
Well, yeah, since like early 20s. I mean, adult life. Early 20s, you know, to late 40s. And I mean, I'm still doing it, mountain bike racing and whatever, right? All this different stuff. And probably within that, the most profound moments of my life have been like around the times when Armstrong was winning the early tours in 99, 2000, when he was in the Olympics and got third in the time trial. You know, I think that was like the Atlanta Olympics or, you know, Atlanta, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And, you know, I mean, I've been into like, you know, watching Le Mans racing in the 80s. And like, I've always just loved bicycles and bicycle racing. So because of that, I just wanted to see what he had to say about things, you know, whatever those things are. And the Forward podcast is like his idea of like, you know what, all this stuff happened, I'm moving forward.
Right.
Well, and it's kind of funny because he wants to talk to various people about their lives, their careers and stuff, and they want to talk to him about bicycle racing and his doping scandals. So he's pretty open, not fully open, but he's pretty open about a lot of things. And then I'm just going through and I'm looking at all the episodes. I don't need to listen to all of them. I mean, he's done it for about 4 years now and he has a lot of episodes.
Oh man, I'm totally gonna listen to these.
Oh, he talks to some cool people. It's pretty awesome.
This is amazing.
I see him interview Ben Foster, and Ben Foster plays Lance Armstrong. So before I listen to the episode, I want to watch the movie. So I watched the movie, and the movie was okay. I mean, I would give it like out of 4 stars, I give it 2, you know.
Ouch.
The acting I felt was not very good. The story, I know a lot of the story because I've been in the bicycle world for a long time. I know, you know, I've read all the books, I've seen all the documentaries and everything there is to know about like the stuff that goes on. However, the thing that was so amazing was you hear the stories and you read the books and people tell you it in these stories.
Right.
But to see it play out on screen, you're just like, oh my God, is that what it was like to do the blood bags, to do the doping,
ugh,
to be in the laboratories and all this stuff. And it's like, it's pretty like, I can't even, I don't know if you've seen Icarus.
Oh no, I haven't, but I've read a lot about it. Yeah.
Oh, Icarus is great too, but it's so profound to watch this and you're just like blown away by how the drugs and how sophisticated it was. And for Lance Armstrong to go on to Oprah and say, yeah, I doped, but like everybody was doping. I mean, dude, it was so sophisticated. And all the books I've read and all the podcasts I've listened to and all the documentaries I've watched, like you don't realize it until like this movie, even though it was not really a biopic, but it was kind of a biopic.
Yeah.
But man, it played it out so like perfect, I felt, you know, and. But what I will say, though, is I was very disappointed by the interview with Ben Foster because I was hoping Armstrong would talk more about the doping, about the team, about all that stuff and get into it. And I was hoping that Ben Foster would talk more about playing the role of Lance Armstrong and everything. And like they both kind of avoided the topic.
They both pulled the punches.
Yeah, totally.
See, that's what I love about the morning show is that Reese Witherspoon, she's in these interviews and she doesn't pull the punches.
Yeah.
And all the studio executives are like, pull your punch. You're like, don't do that. And she says to one of the producers, she says, I push. It's what I do. You know what I mean? And she's just like, she's tenacious to a fault. And it's like, that's what you want as an audience. You want the interviewer and the elephants in the room, guys, talk about it.
No, I mean, totally. Like, I felt like they both tickled each other's balls, but they never grabbed hold. You know what I mean? And it was like, you know, they were just like, oh, yeah, I played you as a character in a movie. You know?
Yeah.
And then Armstrong's like, oh, yeah, those were the days we drugged.
Yeah.
But like they never really got into the nitty gritty, neither of them. And at the end of the movie, they talked about like, and they would slam down like the stack of papers.
Uh-huh.
This was the report that led to to all the information we knew about the movie, and you know, and they really got into like at the end talking about, you know, or alluding to how USADA and the anti-doping agencies and the reports and all this stuff provided all the information this movie needed to know to make a good movie. And then they go into the interview and they're talking to each other and they never really addressed the elephant in the room, you know?
You know who Lance Armstrong should interview?
Who?
Brian Fogel.
Brian Fogel? Who's that?
He's the filmmaker that made Icarus.
Oh, he did.
Did he do that? I didn't see it. I didn't see it in the scrub. I scrubbed through there.
Yeah, no, it was great. I listened to it. He interviewed him. I already listened to that one.
Okay. I didn't see it. I scrubbed through all these episodes. I didn't see him.
Yeah, no, he interviews a lot of cool people and stuff. And
so I scrubbed through all of them, and I want to hear the Bo Jackson.
Oh, that one's the best. Raising children.
Really?
Oh, my God. It will change your perspective of being a father.
Oh, that's awesome. And then it was Sammy Hagar. Sammy Hagar.
I have not. That one downloaded.
All right. We gotta listen to that one. So
no, the Bo Jackson one is of all I've listened to so far, Bo Jackson's top two.
Okay, awesome.
Oh, he will change your perspective on fatherhood.
That's amazing.
That's all I gotta say. You will know it when you hear it.
All right. I'm gonna put that in my Bitcast app since I have the Bitcast app and it's not out for the public yet, but I will put it in there so I can listen to it on that.
Yeah, the Bo Jackson interview was one of my favorite interviews, one of my favorite interviewees of anyone of all time. And it starts off and he's like, you ever been on a podcast? He's like, I've never done a podcast.
No way! This is his first podcast?
First podcast ever.
I'm downloading it right now. And,
oh, it is the best interview of like it, you know, it gets into sports and how he became Bo Jackson kind of a thing. But his views on fatherhood, man, you're just like, wow. And then he totally calls Armstrong out. And he's like, you're weak. So great. It's so great. I mean, I'm totally like drooling over Bo Jackson right now, but it was so great. But no, anyway, just getting back to what I was watching though.
Yes.
The editing I thought was good because they really like cut in the actual racing with the Ben Foster racing. Ben Foster, when he talks about the interview, he lost like 40 or 50 pounds or something to play the Lance Armstrong character.
Ouch. Did Foster dope?
He talked about that. Yeah, he did.
He doped? Foster doped?
Yeah, he talked about getting a coach and doing like, and not doping in the sense of performance enhancing drugs, but drugging in the sense of getting him lean and fit for this role.
Wow.
And he was talking about how he drugged and everything to get himself there and stuff. And I was just like, wow, that's like insane. and then of course, Armstrong's like, you know, you'll never race in pro cycling ever again. You know, he's throwing out.
That's funny. Come on. That's as close as you can get to
funny.
Address.
I laughed.
That's as close as you get to addressing the elephant in the room is that.
For sure. I mean, oh, I laughed. It was great. But I think you'll like the Bo Jackson interview. It was one of my favorites he's done so far. He's done some decent ones. You know, and let me just say this about Lance Armstrong as an interviewer. He's a simple guy. You know, I mean, and he'll say he's a simple guy.
You told me that last week, and I was so happy to hear that somebody that could be at the top of a profession like that could be humble. And to me, that gave me hope for his humanity, you know?
Well, he's humble, but he's also like intellectually simple. He interviews Neil deGrasse Tyson, right?
Yeah.
You know, the physicist. And he goes into it and he's like, you're going to talk about stuff that I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's talking about things that Lance Armstrong is like, I barely graduated high school. Like, I don't even know what this means. but he'll admit he's not as smart. I mean, I don't mean he's not smart in the sense he's not intelligent in his IQ and stuff. I mean, but like,
he's just not book smart. Yeah.
He doesn't have the cognitive academic prowess of an astrophysicist, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when he talks about things in a way that the listener wants to hear it, because it's like, I'm a simple guy wanting simple answers for complex topics. So talk to me at that level.
You're a guy who bikes for a hobby, and I already marvel at the time that you spend on a bike. So if you have to do that for a living, the time you have to spend on a bike is just is immense. What do you think? He doubles the time that you spend on a bike, or triples it for a professional biker?
Okay, so I'll just tell a quick bike story. So
tell me.
Christian Vandeveld. This is like late 90s. Mm-hmm. I was living in Chicago, and I was living in south suburb of Chicago. Christian Vandeveld, who raced on U.S. Postal, was in that area. And I would ride with his dad and just, you know, this bike shop I went to, which is now out of business. It's been out of business for a long time, Blazing Saddles. And I raced on the team there and everything, and we would do this, indoor training, you know, dead of winter. And he would be home from Europe visiting his family. And I remember going to the bathroom in the bike shop after one of the training workouts, and there was his U.S. Postal bike. And I looked at his bike, and he wasn't there, but his bike was there.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I looked at his bike, and this bike was completely destroyed. I mean, it was like, I would call it busage. It was like beautiful usage, right? It was so wrecked. And I looked at it and I'm like, and there was a guy in the back of the shop working on the bike, you know, and he's like, you know, I said, and it had like Vandeveld on the head tube, whatever, or not the head tube, what do you call it? On the top tube, you know, and everything. And I was like, God,
you tell me, I don't know.
And I was like, oh, wow, Christian Vandeveld's bike. He goes, yeah, this bike, he rode 25,000 miles last year.
25,000 miles.
He's like, yeah, the bike was brand new, you know, just like 10 months ago. And I'm looking at this bike, and I mean, it was like, it may as well have just been trash. I mean, it was so destroyed, you know, because he just rode, like, he rode it like I mean, just like 25,000 miles and all kinds of weather and everything. I mean, the thing was just destroyed, you know, and it was like, I'm going to say this was 98, maybe. This might have been, maybe it was 99. Maybe it was like, you know, I don't even know if Armstrong won the tour at this point, but oh my God, the bike was just a wreck. And I ride like, you know, 6,000 miles a year. So if you think, say 5,000 miles a year.
Oh, my
so
God.
I'm like 20,000 miles less than what this guy rides.
And how many hours a week does it take you to do that 5,000?
Well, keep in mind, if I'm riding.
You're training sometimes and then you're not training, but just on average.
I work full time, yeah. Right? So if you think about it that way, I ride Saturdays and Sundays outside.
Uh-huh.
I ride Tuesdays and Thursdays like indoor trainer, and then I commute to work on another bike, you know? So that 5,000 miles is taken up on Saturdays and Sundays for the most part.
Okay.
And then like, you know, spring break, winter break, Thanksgiving, summer, you know, we'll fill in a good amount of miles. But most of the riding is just done on Saturday and Sunday, you know, and I'll go out for like 70, 80 mile rides on those days, you know?
How many hours? How many hours a day? Average. Just average like Saturday and Sunday.
3 to 6.
So 6 hours.
Depending on the difference.
A day.
I mean, on the distance.
So let's say 10 hours a week.
Yeah, about 10 hours a week.
Wow.
10 hours a week. Yeah. So, but that's done in like 2 days, let's say.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So because then you know, multiply it out. So 25,000 miles is a full-time job.
That's what they do, though. That's what their job is.
That is their full-time job. And they put in a little extra.
So figure.
So like 50 hours a week.
Yeah. RT equals D, right? So if you figure they're doing 25,000 miles, I mean, you could figure at 20 miles an hour, let's just make it a nice round number for a pro cyclist.
Right.
20 miles an hour at 25,000 miles. I mean, I don't know. How much time is that? You do the math. You know, it's like that's a lot of mile or a lot of time. And
wait, do I divide or do I add? What do I multiply?
Well, RT equals D. So you would take the rate and divide that by the distance.
So 25,000 divided by 20?
Divided by 20, yeah.
So 1250.
Oh, here we go. We're doing math live as it happens.
1250 hours. That's not a lot, is it?
12,500?
1,250 hours.
No, divide that by 60.
Divided by why? Divided by 60? Why?
60.
60? 20 miles, 20? Is that the 20 miles an hour? Is that what you're trying to get to?
20 miles an hour, yeah.
Yeah, that is 21 miles an hour, yeah.
But, I mean, the point I'm getting at is, you know, they're probably putting in, you know, 5 hours a day on the bike, you know, like 6 days a week, right?
Yep.
I don't know. If I had to guess, they're probably putting in 25 to 30 hours a week on the bike, and then you're looking at weights, maybe a little bit of that, and then stretching and yoga, and who knows what they're doing. They're putting in 50 hours a week of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like diet, you know, and oh, God, I couldn't imagine. Ugh. Couldn't imagine. But anyway, man, happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to you, too. How did your beer finish up?
It's finishing up. It's still good. It's smooth. How about
mine,
you? I mean, like you had, did you finish that whole crowler?
Yeah, I finished that whole crowler. Come on, man.
Oh my God, you shotgun the thing?
No, it was the perfect size. It was the perfect size for a nice podcast length crowler. And thank you to the people at Simsies for canning it for me. It was beautiful. Like I said, I enjoyed it more at the end. The simple notes were accentuated by the warmth of the time. And yeah, beautiful IPA. I think that's why I like IPAs, is that they get better as they warm. You know, I
agree with that.
I enjoy them cold. I don't like warm beer in general, but as a beer warms, it's nice to drink an IPA that will gain complexity as you drink it, you know?
I think stouts fall into that category too. So stouts,
I total 100% agree.
As they warm, like the chocolates get chocolate.
Oh yeah, everything gets richer as things warm.
Totally, complete.
And lagers, they fall apart. they fall apart, you know? Unless,
no, lagers have to be cold.
Lagers and pilsners. Pilsners, you know, you...
Well, a pilsner is a lager.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah. But I couldn't agree more, though, is, like, you can't have a 32-ounce pilsner and expect that sucker to sit out there all night drinking it. I mean... You crack a 12-ouncer and you drink it in, like, you know, 15 minutes.
Yeah. Get your, you know? Get your fresh then, like, one from the cooler.
And then you're on to the right. Next one.
It's yeah, like those, like, ice beers that you used to drink in high school.
Dude. Well, what is it? Coors Light is like when the can shows the mountains, it's ready to drink. That's because it's so cold that my palate is frozen. I can't taste
it. Or like the case of Ice House that you would drink because you wanted a headache the next morning.
Oh, God.
All right. We should get out of here.
We better get going. So.
Watch.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch Mandalorian, and then tomorrow night I'm watching The Irishman.
All right. Awesome. Me too.
Yeah, we'll report back.
Last thing, I actually, because I was on all these streaming services, I let me buy Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No.
So I bought Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, so we will definitely watch that this week.
Very cool.
We'll talk about it next week.
Looking forward.
There we go.
Can't wait.
All right.
All right, man. Good
talk
night.
To you later. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.